We are studying the book of Habakkuk for the last few weeks in the next month or two. The book of Habakkuk, that's in the Old Testament. It's going to be on page 806 of the Bibles that we have provided. And we're still in chapter 1, but we're going to finish chapter 1 this morning and move on through into chapter 2. But Habakkuk, chapter 1, I was reminded, I think it was last week, that sometimes we do books that you need some time to turn to because you're not used to turning there. So take your time, find Habakkuk. There's a table of contents, Old Testament, small book. If you want to use the YouVersion event that we have on your phones, if you use the Bible app, there's an event there. You just search Bethel Erie. Should be one word, and you can find the event there. It'll have some supporting passages as well, not just the normal, the actual passage that we have. That one will be there, and some notes are in there too, and you can take notes. I know some of you do take advantage of that. You put your notes in there, and you use that, and that's your thing, and that's great. So Habakkuk chapter 1, we're going to be looking and beginning in verse 12 when we get there, but just want to bring us up to speed and remind us and get us into the thoughts that Habakkuk has here. So Habakkuk is representative of, he's representing his readers, he's representing his audience and us for that matter by asking really tough, honest, valid questions of God. Questions that you maybe have asked in your own heart. Maybe you've been too scared to actually say it out loud or think it out loud, if that makes sense. For those of you that maybe have prayed a long time and you pray in your head and sometimes it's directed towards God and sometimes it's just a thought in your mind. Maybe you've not been confident enough to actually ask God of this, but you've thought it. You know, questions like, how is this, whatever this is, how is this fair? How is this fair to have this exist? Or why isn't this working? Why isn't the thing that I'm doing that I was told is biblical, that I was told is what God wants, why isn't it working? How does this, the thing that I'm seeing, how does this make sense? Like, why is this exist in this way? The root of Habakkuk's complaint is that despite finally having a righteous king who completely reformed the kingdom of Judah and brought mass revival from some significant idolatry, that king God allowed to die prematurely, and then his sons immediately and completely devastated the kingdom of Judah, spiritually and politically. They completely undid everything, every advancement, every step of progress that had happened. They just threw it out the window. And Habakkuk is standing there going, how? How does this make any sense? And it's a tough pill to swallow and to understand. And it definitely causes questions. It's hard to make sense of that. And on top of that, we saw last week was that God's solution to the wickedness that Habakkuk is saying, hey, you see this, right? Like, you see why? Why is this allowed to happen? And God's solution to the wickedness and the moral collapse of Judah that Habakkuk has questions and problems about and complains about and asks God to deal with, his solution is amazing. But it is not what Habakkuk was hoping for. And in fact, it actually seems to make things worse from Habakkuk's perspective. It doesn't make them better. And God tells Habakkuk, I am going to deal with this. I am going to deal with the wickedness and the moral collapse that you're seeing, that you're frustrated by, that is bringing you these questions. I'm raising up the Babylonians to come judge Judah's wickedness. I'm going to replace the injustice of Judah with a complete lack of justice with the Babylonians, is his solution, is his answer. I'm going to judge wickedness with wickedness. I'm doing something, Habakkuk. You thought I wasn't doing something, but I am doing something. And so there's a couple things there, and we've talked about this. We studied this last week. There's a couple things there. Habakkuk is learning for us, on our behalf, that our solutions are rarely God's solutions. And that we should stop expecting conventional solutions from an unconventional God. And that we look at a situation and we go, I know how you're supposed to solve this. I know what the solution is. And God, through Habakkuk, shows us, no, you don't. No, you don't. And stop expecting conventional solutions from me. Right? Because I'm not a conventional God. I'm doing something. I'm solving this. And I'm going to do this the best way, the right way. But it's not necessarily always going to be the way that you think that I should. God doesn't think and plan or solve the way that we would. And that's important. It's a basic part of why we worship him, because he doesn't think like us. But also, I think that we can all agree that God's solution, we wouldn't like if we were Habakkuk. If we were Habakkuk and we were hearing and we were complaining to God, man, my boss stinks. Like, he is the most, like, immoral, like, frustrating, underhanded, deceitful person I have ever met. Can you do something about this? And God says, sure, he's going to be fired, and your new boss is even worse. We would look at that and go, I wish I hadn't asked, right? I wish I had not asked for a solution. This is not what I like. Habakkuk doesn't like the solution. He doesn't like the answer. And God's answer very much confuses Habakkuk, and it probably would confuse you too. I asked for help, and your help is worse. It's worse people. I asked for help from bad people, and you're giving us worse people. And we have that frustration, right? You've struggled with finances, and it looks like you're going to have a hard time paying the bill, and you say, God, I need some sort of solution here. And he's like, I understand that. I'm going to break your car. And you look at that and you think, how is this better? How is this the solution, right? Or you have a very, very tough relationship with a person and you've prayed over and over again, can you help me solve this? Can you help me deal with this? Can you repair this relationship? And then the next day you have a knockdown, drag out argument. And you're thinking, how is this better? How is this the solution? How is this what we were given in response? And so while last week we had that reminder that, okay, well, God's solutions are not our solutions. In fact, our solutions are rarely the way that God solves, and God often works unconventionally. We're still, though, regularly left with, okay, God's doing something, but what if I don't like it? What if I don't like what God is doing? What if I don't understand what God is doing? Like, what if it seems wrong? What if his solution seems like the wrong solution? And because Habakkuk doesn't like it, he's confused. I don't understand. I do not understand how this makes sense. And because he's confused, he keeps his confrontation going, fortunately for us. He keeps his confrontation going, and it's on our behalf. It's for our benefit to see, okay, what if I don't like it? What if it feels wrong when God gives me an answer or the solution? And maybe you've been there, maybe you've seen God's answers, and you don't like them. Or more than that, they confuse you. They frustrate you, or they're tough to make sense of when you see it or when you hear it. And so remember, God tells Habakkuk, my solution for wickedness that you're frustrated with is that I'm going to bring in more wickedness, the Babylonians to sweep in and judge the wickedness of Judah. And he's right, that's just. Wickedness deserves to be punished, but it's not a great answer for Habakkuk. And so here's Habakkuk's response. Look at Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 12. And keep in mind, he's very confused. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Lord, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You've made people like the fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe, though, pulls all of them up with fish hooks. He catches them in his net, and he gathers them up in his dragnet. And so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. By his net, he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? So Habakkuk, you hopefully can hear the confusion in what he's hearing and what he knows. He starts with rhetorical questions, and he starts with some statements that are in and of themselves rhetorical, but their questions and the statements are actually both. The statements are questions, and the questions are statements, and they're both of those things. They're kind of questions, kind of statements. And so he hears God's solution, and he starts by saying, hold on a second. Aren't you, verse 12, aren't you Yahweh? And you'll notice that word Lord there in verse 12, in most of your versions, is all capital letters, L-O-R-D, all capital letters. That means that this is the personal name of God. It's Yahweh. It's not, aren't you like the Lord, like in charge of things, or aren't you Elohim, like just God? This is Yahweh. Aren't you the personal covenant-keeping God that introduced yourself to us through Moses? Aren't you Yahweh? Aren't you everlasting, he says in verse 12. And he's not being disrespectful. He's not questioning his faith, like maybe you're not. That's not what he's doing, but he's confused and he's trying to process the solution he heard in verses 5 to 11 and what he knows about God. How does that solution match with God's character? And he's articulating what he knows to be true about God. But it has the tone of questioning too, because he's really wrestling with this. You're bringing in the Babylonians. Aren't you Yahweh? Aren't you? How? How does this make any sense? And we've all been there, or we will be there, right? When what we experience in life seemingly contradicts the nature of God and challenges or calls into question what we know to be true about God. It doesn't mean that Habakkuk is doubting. This question and this struggle doesn't mean that he has weak faith, because he's saying, well, hold on a second. Trying to reconcile the character of God with what you're experiencing doesn't make you a bad Christian, where you go, how does this make sense? And it doesn't reveal that you maybe have weak faith because you don't get it, or it concerns you, or you don't just immediately agree. We have questions. We can have questions. We have honest, legitimate questions in our lives born out of terrible situations. We have genuine concerns and confusion born out of other people's sin or out of our mistakes. And those experiences, knowing that God allows them or doesn't give the solution that we're hoping for, that can be hard to reconcile with the nature of God, with what we know to be true of God. Because life gives us these moments of tragedy where it's really hard to understand why. Life gives us these moments of grief where I don't get how in any way this was good. Life gives us these moments of anger where we respond and have a very, very difficult time saying, aren't you Yahweh? How? How is this what I'm experiencing? Asking that question and feeling that concern and wondering is not weak faith. Habakkuk is not demonstrating weak faith. He's demonstrating perplexed faith. It's a faith that believes in God, but also doesn't understand. And we all at times will experience perplexed faith, like Habakkuk does, where we say, I know who you are, but I don't understand how this makes sense. And Habakkuk says, wait a second. Hold on a second. Judge Judah's wickedness with more wickedness, which stinks for righteous people here. Aren't you Yahweh? And Habakkuk lists and reflects on what he knows to be God's nature and God's character, and tries to come to terms with what he's hearing. And so look again at verse 12. Lord, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. So he states, you're Yahweh. Fact. You are Yahweh. Are you not Yahweh? You are Yahweh. The covenant God. The one who said, I am who I am. The one who has always existed and always will exist. You are timeless. You are eternal. You're always consistent. Always faithful to your character and your purpose and your promises. Are you not Yahweh? You are Yahweh. And he states, you're from everlasting. You have seen it all. You aren't the new guy around here who hasn't experienced a situation before, so you clearly know all the information when you make this solution. You have the experience and the knowledge of endless existence. This is who you are. I know this. And he states, he keeps going, he says, you're my God. And you notice that he makes this very personal. You're my God. Habakkuk recognizes that God is personal. He's the God who sees and is concerned and cares about his people. And he's not done. Habakkuk acknowledges and states that God is the Holy One. He's other than anyone. He's other than anything else, unlike everything else that exists. He is separate on a different level, particularly because of his complete separation from sin. And then Habakkuk says, you'll see this in verse 12, you're Yahweh, you are everlasting, you are my God, you are personal to me, you are the Holy One, you are separate and aside from anything and unlike anything else. And then he says, you will never die. And in truth, this phrase is a little bit tricky to translate. But if you have the King James Version and the New King James Version, you'll notice that it doesn't say you will never die, it says we will never die. And I think, in my educated opinion, that the New King James and the King James get it right when they switch you for we. And I would be okay, if you would be okay, if you cross out you and write we. We will never die. And the reason that I think this is better, not just because I say it's better, but the reason I believe that it is better is because there was a scribal choice back when they were translating these verses or writing these verses back in the day that they felt it was questionable to question God and his will, which is why they took we and made it you. And I'll show you why we makes more sense and how it's questioning God's will. And so they didn't want to question God's will. They didn't question God's character. And so instead they wanted to say, they said, let's do you. You will never die. But it's a questionable change. It's possible, but questionable change. And also there was never, if you read the Bible, there's almost never any expressed concern that God could die. It's not really anywhere else in the Bible that people were worried that maybe God could die. So this is kind of a new concern that would be rare to be expressed. And so for those two reasons, it seems like the best translation is we will never die. And what Habakkuk is driving home is his confusion. He's driving home his confusion about what he knows about God and what he knows, what he's seeing. And so what he's saying is, first of all, you're Yahweh. Second, you're everlasting. This isn't new to you. You've got experience. You're personal to me, so you care about me. You care about these people. You're the Holy One, so you're completely separate from sin. You're unlike anyone else. You don't reason the same way we do. You don't think that you're unaffected by the things that affect us. And we will never die. You're going to let us be taken over by Babylon. We're your covenant people. You wouldn't let us die. You wouldn't let us die, right? That's your character. You're not going to let us die. You can't let us die. You're our protector. You're committed. You're Yahweh. You're committed to us. Surely we're not all going to die. So this is hard for me to understand, right? And the New Living Translation, if you have the New Living Translation, it's got a great way to express this. The New Living Translation says, surely you do not plan to wipe us out. That is not consistent with what I know to be true of you. Surely, you're going to make sure we live. So why are we doing this? And so Habakkuk states in verse 12 there, that God is personal, God is eternal, God is faithful, God is holy, God is consistent and committed to his people. That's who he is. But he's both stating facts and he's asking questions. This is who you are. Isn't this who you are? Or this is what I know to be true of you. And the situation, though, makes me say, this is what I know to be true. Isn't this true? This is true, right? I'm not crazy. I'm not the one that's crazy here. This is who God is. And we see this because Habakkuk dips back into his perplexed faith, the rest of verse 12. He continues in the middle of verse 12, you, Lord, all capitals, Yahweh, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, still personal, have ordained them to punish. And so he says, this is who God is. He's personal, he's eternal, he's faithful, he's holy, he's consistent, he's committed, right? He's all of these things. That's who you are. Isn't this who you are? And yet, somehow, you've appointed them, the Babylonians, you've ordained them, and your solution is judgment from them, from the Babylonians, who you made very clear are not good people. Right? This is your, somehow you've done that. And so I know, Habakkuk is saying, I know that God is the architect. He's the appointer. Right? And remember, one of the shocking things about the solution is that God is moving a nation who don't consider him to be their God. He's using a people that don't even acknowledge him or worship him, and he's using an entire nation, an empire for his purposes. And Habakkuk's saying, look, I get that you're the architect. You are the appointer. Right? And you're the planner. Like, this is a fact. You have appointed them. That is your God. That's who you are. And in his planning, Habakkuk knows that God is a solid rock. He's a foundation for decisions. You're my rock that ordains. You're foundational for moments and for happenings. You're unmovable and unwavering. You are constant, right? In the way that you decide and how you decide and all of those things. And in using the words have ordained, you've ordained them to punish, Habakkuk is describing God's non-reactionary planning. It's not that you suddenly decided, right? This solution, the Babylonians coming, wasn't unexpected to God. This was actually the plan before Josiah died. You ordained this. It takes a long time for a nation to rise. And God says, this was my, when I planned a long time ago, Josiah was going to die in this way. I also had a plan for your reaction, their reaction, everyone's reaction. We had a plan. This has been ordained. Right? Babylon was ordained for this role. And you notice that Habakkuk isn't saying you can't appoint, you can't ordain them. Right? He recognizes that God can. This is what you do. You appointed them. You've ordained them. That this is God's right, and it's God's job to appoint and ordain as the rock, the foundation for everything that doesn't change. He can do whatever he wants. This is a fact. This is who God is. So God is personal. God is eternal. God is faithful. God is holy. God is consistent. God is the architect. He's foundational. He's constant. He's the pre-planner. I know these things about God. That's who you are. Isn't that who you are? It's perplexed faith. I know this is who you are, but I also have some questions. And so he continues to sort out and process what he knows and what he's heard. Look at verse 13. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Follow-up question, why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? So more statement questions. So I know this about you, God. You don't have a relationship with evil. That's what he means when he says your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You don't experience evil. You don't take it in. You don't experience it. You don't have a relationship with it in a personal way, right? You don't contemplate evil. It's not even a consideration for you. You don't internalize evil. Your character in verse 13 is to not tolerate wickedness. Specifically, when he says wrongdoing, the wickedness that one person does to another, we know this about God, that God is close and near to the brokenhearted. God cares about the oppressed. God is concerned about those who are oppressed. He has deep care for those who seem to be mistreated. We know this about God. I know that, God, you cannot tolerate when one person mistreats another person, particularly for evil reasons. So why do you tolerate treachery? Why do you keep quiet when a righteous person is overcome by an unrighteous person? And see, those two things seem opposite. What I know and what I'm seeing and hearing, I don't understand. And God, because God appears to be doing the opposite of what Habakkuk believed of God. And I'm sure you have had these moments where you have said something like, this person is just toxic in my life. You care very much about people feeling oppressed or hurt. Why is this continuing? Why haven't I had a solution? Or this situation is just bad for me and I want to be out. I want to be done. I don't feel like I can be done. I feel trapped, but I need a solution. And so if you would just give me anything, a job, a place to go, something to solve the problem so I'm not stuck anymore, but we're still there. But isn't that the kind of thing that God would love to do? Recently, in the last few years, and you've probably seen this on the news, there's news reports about this happening regularly. Thank goodness, not so much here in our part of the country, some in our state in different parts, but more on the western coast. But maybe you've seen those news reports where there are certain stores that feel helpless because they can't do anything about looting. When people break into their stores, they take anything and everything, and you've probably seen videos, right, of people just running through these high-end stores, for a while it was pharmacies. Remember, they were breaking into pharmacies, just running in, taking everything they possibly wanted and leaving. And if you watched any of those videos, one of the most frustrating things about those videos is who else was watching in the video. There's a security guard. There's a security guard or a police officer standing there watching this happen, right? And you watching the video, I'm sure the employees standing there in that moment are going, hey, so here's the thing I know about cops. You're supposed to uphold justice. You're supposed to, you know, detain people when they're doing the wrong thing and arrest them and then make sure that they have justice, right? I know what cops are supposed to do. So quick question. Why aren't you doing something? You're just standing here watching, and this is hard to reconcile with what I know about what you're supposed to be doing, right? Here's a cop standing alongside someone who commits a crime and doesn't do anything. You're doing the opposite of what I believe that you should be doing. Why? How are you not involving yourself? And Habakkuk is asking a very similar question, right? I'm not saying I don't believe in God. Habakkuk's not even saying that he's doubting God. He's saying, I do believe in you. Here's what I believe about you, and I'm not wrong in these things that I believe about you. It's fair and it's right for me to believe all of this. It's fair and right for you to believe that a cop should uphold justice, right? It's right for Habakkuk to say all of these things. You are Yahweh. You are everlasting. You are personal. You are eternal, right? You are the one who gets to appoint. You are the one who gets to choose and pre-plan. You are the foundation. You are the one that should be separate from anything that is sinful. You are the one that has no experience with evil. You are the one that cares very much for when people do wrong to other people. All of these things are what I believe. I believe in who you are. But what I believe about you isn't matching what I'm experiencing. That's not no faith. That's perplexed faith. So I'm confused how the God I believe in matches with what I'm experiencing or what you said I'm going to experience. It doesn't make sense. He's not done. He keeps going in verse 14. He said, you have made people like the fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. Verse 15, the wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net, and he gathers them up in his dragnet, and so he rejoices and is glad. So this description, what Habakkuk uses here, is actually tailored to the Babylonians. So Habakkuk describes the world as a sea and a system where fish and sea creatures exist and live in harmony. When he says they exist without a ruler, he's not saying it's chaos. He's saying it's harmony. They have a system. The sea has a system. It's a system that, if left uninterrupted, works great. And he says, God, you made a great system. We're like the fish and the sea creatures of the sea, doing our thing, living in harmony, following what you made us to do. And then the fisherman comes along and ruins everything. The fisherman comes along and disrupts it. God created the world to exist without evil interruption, and now he's going to intentionally let the evil Babylonians interrupt his system, disrupt what he made. Habakkuk describes cruel behavior particular to the Babylonians, which is why he uses the sea illustration. They were known to be mariners, and they were known to have specific and cruel ways of dealing with people. The Babylonians would drag their defeated rulers around in fishing nets to humiliate them after they have won a victory. And notice, he says, the wicked foe gathers them in his net, gathers them up in his dragnet. Because the Babylonians, when they were victorious, would take their leaders and drag them through the streets in a fishnet. They would also manage their captives by putting a fish hook through their lower lip and then linking those fish hooks to one long rope and then leading them through the streets and keeping them captive, a way of preventing them from escaping and from running, leading them in this long line. And he says, the wicked foe pulls them up with hooks. Habakkuk is describing vividly to make sure that God is clear. I know who these people are, right? I know what they do. I know how cruel they are. You know how cruel they are. And his point is, though, that don't the actions of the Babylonians directly contradict and interrupt and disrupt God's sea? Right? It doesn't fit into God's design. You're too pure to look on evil. These people are evil, and they're going to disrupt what you've made. And the result is, he says, is the Babylonians rejoicing and being glad. At the end of verse 15, they rejoice and they're glad, but no one else rejoices and are glad. They rejoice and are glad in their disruption of what you've made. We were rejoicing and being glad in what you made, but they're celebrating their wickedness. Shouldn't or wouldn't God want his people to rejoice and be glad? And this gives the appearance that evil is rewarded, verse 16, right? Well, he'll go on to this. It gives the appearance that evil is rewarded and they enjoy their prosperity, and it results in what Habakkuk believes to be the wrong messaging. In fact, Habakkuk says, this choice, this solution, has the opposite result that I think you would want. Verse 16, therefore, the Babylonians sacrifice to their nets and burn incense to the dragnet. And for by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy, one ruler after another ruler after another? He feels pretty confident. He's just going to keep going. It doesn't match with your character that you would want this to keep rolling. This thing that God is doing in response to the wickedness that Habakkuk experiences will result in the expansion and the encouragement of pagan worship. That doesn't mesh with me. Habakkuk says it will push people from the worship of God to idol worship or self-worship. It doesn't expand the worship of God, and people are going to learn the wrong lesson. This all seems to be going in the wrong direction. I don't know how it wouldn't, Habakkuk is saying. I can't understand how this matches with the character and the heart of God. A holy God can't endure the prosperity of the godless, let alone use them, can he? How does it make sense? And again, this is not weak faith, this is perplexed faith. He's trying to understand what he's experiencing and process it with what he knows, what he believes about God. And so Habakkuk says, I'm really confused. I really don't understand. And then he says this in chapter 2, verse 1. So here's what I know, and here's why I'm confused. So I'm going to stand on my watch, station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what God will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. I'm going to wait and see how I can explain this to everybody else. Please respond. Help me understand how I should react and help other people react. And so maybe you've dealt with perplexed faith. We're going to get some more answers as we read through this book, but that's actually not today. Maybe you've dealt with that, where you experience or you see God doing or allowing something, and it just confuses. It just brings up more questions. And maybe you don't like it, and you just want to know why. Like, how? Just explain it to me. Just make this make sense. And no matter how hard you've tried, you just can't make sense of it. You can't piece it together. And Habakkuk shows us, inadvertently, the right first step to take. The right first step to take with our perplexed faith, right? And taking that step helps us avoid a major mistake. So when we don't understand or we don't like answers or feel genuinely confused, the first thing that we have to do is push into what we know about God. When we're confused, when we are even distressed or struggling with what we're looking at, the first thing we have to do is push into what we know about God, push into God's character, and reaffirm our trust in who God is. We first have to go and say, I know this about God. I know this about God. See, often when we experience perplexed faith, we want first to try to understand our situation. We want first to try to understand our circumstance because we want our problem solved, right? Or we want to be at a place where we agree with the solution. And so first, we want to understand the solution. We want to understand the reasoning, the situation. But instead, we should be trying to understand God first. And when we have those moments of perplexity, genuine questions, real questions, valid questions, we first need to push into God and understand who God is. Because God doesn't always give us answers. The situation won't always make sense to us. In fact, the author of Ecclesiastes tells us, if you look at Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 15, and then also chapter 7, verse 13, 1:15 says, what is crooked cannot be straightened, what is lacking cannot be counted. And then the author later on in his book lets us know that this is kind of a God thing. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? He's saying that sometimes things are perplexing. Sometimes there are questions in life. And they're knots, and they're twisted, and they're bent, and they're crooked, and we often cannot undo them. They are 1,000-piece puzzles with 6 puzzle pieces missing. And no matter how hard you try to put it all together, you're still going to have gaps. You're still going to have a question. Hopefully, they're not the 4-corner pieces. But there's going to be things missing. And those gaps that are there mean that we cannot understand the why sometimes. We cannot understand the why of what we're looking at or try to make sense of it. And our first step shouldn't be to try to make sense of it. It shouldn't be to try to have our resolution in the situation. Our first should be to make sense of God. And what Habakkuk reveals to us is here with his experience, and what the author of Ecclesiastes is going to go on and tell us, is that when we don't understand the situation, we have to lean into what we know about God. I don't get this, but I get you. Because sometimes we forget that the actions of God are rooted in the character of God. And we can forget that. That the actions of God, or the things that God allows, the things that he does, the things he's doing, are always rooted in his character. And so I might not always understand the situation, but I understand God. I need to lean into God, because the thing he's doing is always rooted in his character. Our circumstance doesn't change who God is. Our confusion doesn't change who God is. Who God is never changes, regardless of what we see. And so the most stabilizing thing that we can do, what Habakkuk accidentally does here for us, is the best thing that we can do with our perplexed faith, and that is to refresh our understanding of who God is. This is very confusing for me, but here's what I know about God. And that doesn't give us an answer all the time for the situation, but it gives us stability and a place of calm and a source of confidence. And the truth is, we worship who God is, not what he does for us. We worship God because of who he is, not what he does for us. We love him because of what he does for us, but we worship him and submit to him because God is, because of who he is. And so when we get to a situation, a circumstance, I just don't get it. This doesn't make any sense to me. Lean into who God is. You know who he is. And that won't always give you the solution or the answer that you're looking for, but it's the first step in resolving that tension in us, in our perplexed faith. In fact, Solomon reminds us in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, he says that the fear of the Lord, it's reverence, worship, respect of God, is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. The key to navigating life and life's dilemmas is revering God, is respecting who God is. And this is why it's important to note that Habakkuk starts with, you're Yahweh. Literally, that means God is. You are. I know who you are. If we don't lean into what we know about God, into who God is, into his character and his nature, then the danger is that those questions and that confusion can become destructive. The questions and the confusion aren't bad. It's okay to have perplexed faith as long as we resolve it first with the character and the nature of God. Often the answers to our why is simply because God is. You can because God is. So the answer to our perplexed faith is not necessarily getting a better understanding of the situation. I want to understand the situation better, and God wants me to understand him better. And the answer is the understanding of God. And in fact, too many answers, or always having answers, removes faith, which is why the author of Ecclesiastes recognizes that sometimes God ties the knot of understanding in a way that we cannot understand it, because sometimes you just have to say, because God is, and we have to trust him, and that should be enough. It should be enough for us in those dilemmas to hear, because God is. I didn't say easy. I didn't say it's easy to hear that, but if we believe in God, it should be enough to hear, because God is. The truth is, you can live with an unresolvable situation because God is. Habakkuk answered his own question. He just didn't realize it. Verse 12, first word, God is. God is. God is personal. God is eternal. God is faithful. God is holy. God is consistent and committed to his people. God is the architect. God is foundational. God is constant. God is the pre-planner. God is just. God does not enjoy evil, and God is not evil. And what we have to realize as believers is that God doesn't always give us answers, but he gives us himself and a view of who he is. He doesn't always give us answers, but he does give us himself. And this is why we can deal with perplexed faith, because we know God. I don't understand, but I know God. I know God is. You remember when Christians used to repeat, God is good all the time, and all the time God is good? This is why. Because God is. And we used to say that when situations were a little bit frustrating or a little bit confusing and we couldn't resolve them, and the response was, well, God is good all the time, and all the time God is good. Because that is the answer, God is. The answer is in God's unchanging character. God is Yahweh always. And so I don't know what it is that you have questions about or what it is that you're going to have questions about and you're going to struggle with. And sometimes along the way, God does eventually show us the answer and give us the resolution. Sometimes it's a knot that can't be untied. It's normal to have perplexed faith, to say, this situation is hard to reconcile with what I know about God. You're right. It is hard. And that happens. When it does, the key to avoid deep doubt and struggle and concluding incorrect truth is not to demand that you understand the situation, but instead seek a better understanding of God. I know this about your situation. You might not understand the why or even how it makes sense because God doesn't always give us the answers, but he has given you himself. So what about his character speaks to your situation? List it off. Make a list. This is my situation. Here's what I know about God, though. This is God in my situation. List it off like Habakkuk does. Study what God has revealed about himself because you have a God who is. Your God is. Let me pray for you. Father, we all have these situations. We all have these concerns. And if we don't now, we know they're coming. And it's really easy for me to want to understand the situation. Just help me understand why this is happening. Instead, will you give us the wisdom to pause and lean into our fear of you, our respect for you, our awe of who you are. Remind us in all the ways that you can bring to mind through your word how to finish that sentence, God is, and help us resolve and live with our perplexed faith when sometimes we don't have the solutions. And I pray that who you are is a comfort to each of us as we walk the road of struggling and questions and concern. Father, thank you for being close, for being true, for loving, for having wisdom, for having concern, for sending your son because you are love. And I pray this and I thank you in your son's name.